woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun.
Well, home base action giants have technology. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 750. Dow futures up 81. NASDAQ futures up 33. Continuing yesterday's pretty big time rally. We're back to way higher than we were on Christmas Eve. So I guess that's positive. Some people think we're getting ahead of ourselves, but who knows? We never really know. So this could be, we could be here, we could have a Chinese deal. The rest of the world seems to think we're getting one. I think there's a little more damage been done in the meantime than maybe other people, but then again, that's fine. I mean, I don't really want things going down. I'm very bullish with a lot of my new clients, or they are. So, I'm long all over the place, so rallies are good. So how's that, Kevin? Rallies are good.
Rallies are good if it's your, well, if it's your baseball team, rallies are good.
Well, not if you're the opposing team.
If you're a Duke fan, rallies are good.
Yeah. If you're a Bears, you're going to
just... Did they come back from, like, down 23 last night?
They did, against Louisville, who's a solid team.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd call that a rally as much as I'd call it a major choke job by Louisville. It was hard. It was painful to watch.
A lot of turnovers, or just
Coming down the stretch, you know, with just a couple minutes left, I think they still had an 8-point lead, and just turned the ball over three times in a row, missed free throws when they were being fouled intentionally. You know, they did everything to give it away, and you know, I only got home for the end of it, so I didn't see them build their rally, and it was just. I didn't see Louisville build the lead, so I don't know what they did to get the big lead, but my goodness, they fell apart at the end.
Who's their coach these days?
Chris Mack.
He's the guy
Chris
that...
Mack was at
Xavier.
Oh, okay.
He's a good coach.
So the guys weren't doing what he told them last night. Get out there and make those free throws.
Well, they were expecting...
You know what? There are so many times, and there were a couple of times they put the camera on Mack during this rally where he was just shaking his head. There was a game on, I don't know, I don't think it was last weekend, but recently where they mic'd up the coaches for the whole game. They weren't going away for commercials. And it was a Big East game. And they're at the end and the coach says, for the final shot of the game, the coach says to him, okay, we want to go fast. We want to get up the court and get the ball there. So they walk out on the floor and immediately proceed to walk the ball up the court and hold it at the top for a last second heave shot that didn't go in. I was sitting there going, he's looking at him and he says, understand? Everybody nods yes, and then they walk out and do the exact opposite. I would hate coaching that age group.
So what do you do when you walk in the locker room when it happens? I'd have an issue with it, and I don't have much of a temper. I mean,
I think it's probably one of those things that's best held until practice. In the end, coaches allocate their practice time differently. You have a very limited amount in college. You're limited. You have this 20-hour limitation. If you abuse it, you're probably not going to abuse it on the practice floor. It would be more in the not mandatory workouts. So, when you get in that situation in a game, it needs to be old hat. The coach needs to be able to look at them and say, this is just like we've practiced every day this week, every day this year. And I think some coaches don't spend as much time as they should on in-game situations, because there's a lot of them in college. And I think it's really, it's just one of those things where you need to put a disproportionate amount of time into it. And I know that's difficult when you have 20 hours a week. Games count as three, so you take your two games a week out, now you're down to 14. And then you have some meeting time and things like that. And by the time you get done, you don't have a lot of practice time. And so it's hard to say I'm going to spend a half hour every practice working on end game situations when you only have an hour and a half of practice in the first place.
Funny you should mention that. LaFonso Wallace, he was a Digger guy, wasn't he?
Digger recruited him, but he played most of his time for McLeod.
He must have played some. I don't know, was him or one of the other guys was the announcer for the Irish. I actually, back in the day, I don't know what I had going. One year where I was at the, I think I was playing handball. I had a handball thing or something. I don't know. Something was going on over there where I was at the convo, which was a ways away from our dorm, obviously. Maybe a couple times a week when Digger was having practice. So I'd wander by and I'd stop and you could sit and watch. And I think there was an advantage to having practice in the arena you played in. Cause Digger was a huge, just what you said. The practice, the last 40 minutes was put 20 seconds on the clock. We're coming up the floor. Put 20 seconds on the clock. We're playing defense. Put 12 seconds on the clock. Put 10. Put 8. I think he was a real believer that the fundamental skills you learn in those kinds of situations kind of sort of took care of the rest of the game, or something. And he would practice that constantly. And one of the guy who's, I think it's the fans, is he's played for four or five big-time coaches in the NBA, and they said, who is the best in the last 20 seconds? And he said, without a doubt, Digger Phelps. He was better than any of those pro coaches. He took that amazingly seriously, and that's what they practice like every night. But I think a lot of it helped that you knew right where the 24 second, or well, there was no 24. I mean, but you knew right where the clock was, and you know, I mean, they practice it in the same arena. Anyway, I'm just saying.
Yeah, it probably does help to practice in the same arena. I know Mike Bray spends a lot of time on this stuff too. But it varies from coach to coach, and you know it sort of also depends. You know, it helps if you have an older team because you can spend the practice time on that, and you don't have to worry so much about do they know the base offense? Do they know do they know our zone? Do they know our help defense and how we handle how we hedge screens and all that? If you don't have to spend as much time on the basics, then you have a little bit more time, and I think that becomes a factor for coaches too. Again, in the NBA, I'm less familiar with the practice regimen, so I don't know what to tell you that they do, but I can tell you that they have a lot more time because you report for your work day there. It's just like it's just like you and me going to work.
Well, I suppose that's probably true because it's like anything else. It's time management, and if you practice all week for the last 2 minutes, and all of a sudden you get blown out by God knows what, you're like, oop,
and you're saying, why didn't we spend more time on defensive drills and things like that so that we wouldn't get blown out?
So
that was the Duke Louisville game, but it was horrible, and Duke had sort of that classic nobody wants to take a shot way about them.
Is this kid
just get the ball over half court and pass it to somebody else?
I'm going to lob this one out to you. Is this kid on Duke good enough to take half of the NBA season and make it look like everybody's just trying to lose? I mean, to me, I don't. I don't know if
he is generational talent. This is incredibly gifted.
But is it worth that? I mean, I think some of these NBA games are horrible. I mean, if they're all just trying, the Bulls are obviously trying to lose. If you score, they trade you the next day, for God's sake.
Well, if the Bulls players are trying to lose, it's because they hate coach and management. But if the team is trying to lose, then yes, they're dishing off guys. They're dishing off. Now, you know, theoretically, they're trading away current assets for future assets. I've hardly watched the Bulls this year.
I know you're not.
They are an insult to the sport.
I understand that what you're not on them as much as you. That's total BS that they're pushing. They took that rid of a guy for 2 second round draft picks, and the next week they traded the second round draft pick for money. I mean, I don't see any.
If they think that they're, you know, clearing out cap space and roster space for future free agents, they're sorely mistaken, because the Bulls' reputation as an organization is not good. They're not going to get great players.
No, I would say.
They're going to have to draft them. And their problem right now is not only are they going to have to draft them, but they're going to have to avoid the Anthony Davis situation now, where he gets to the end of his, or towards, even somewhere towards the end of his contract, and he's saying, you know, I'm not going to sign here, so you really ought to trade me.
Well, that's I don't know how you don't, I'm going to use the term, fall into that. I mean, there were I'm trying to remember when I was a Ute. Trying to remember as long ago. Baseball, when you had the eight teams, 10 teams, there were teams that were out of it, you know, already in May and June. I mean, right? Because you didn't. There was no wild cards. There was no double wild cards. There was none of that stuff. So if you're in a 10 team league and you had to win it to get somewhere, well, it's pretty obvious by June, the four teams that got no chance. Every team seemed to have a star, and when if you went out there to watch them play, you would never guess they were out of it. I mean, a lot of it was, you know, people playing for themselves, I suppose, and stats and whatever you want to do it. But it's really obvious some of these basketball teams are. They don't seem to care. And I don't know how you would. I never thought that, as bad as the Cubs were, that Bill Wrigley wanted anybody to lose that day. And yet you get the feeling coming out of the... I mean, I'm sure John Paxson will never actually say, oh, we want him to lose tonight. But he really wants him to be in last place at the end of the year, which sort of adds up to a bunch of nights in a row, doesn't it?
It does.
I don't blame the organizations for this at all. And I don't blame John Paxson. It's clear that it's the right strategy. I blame the league. Change the rules.
What's the rules?
Make the draft completely random.
Well, I don't think you can do that.
Well, you gotta do something. I don't know how you do it. I mean, I could probably pull up 10 proposals of fixing it, because it's pissing everyone off. But it's clearly the right strategy. You'd be stupid not to.
Well, but I mean, you look at the team that,
we saw it here with the Cubs. We saw it with the Blackhawks. It's the perfect strategy. You're bad for a few years in a row, you draft well, and you turn it around quickly, and then you're good for 10 years.
Well, look at football. It's not just the Patriots. And they're somewhat unique. But not really. I mean, the fact that they've won all the Super Bowls are unique. All right. But in terms of having a dominating team for a real long time, the Packers certainly did. The Dallas Cowboys certainly did. For a decade, I'm going to say the Redskins probably did. The Raiders for a long time. And they didn't get there because they fell asleep and they were horrible for 10 years and they got all the draft picks. They had an organization where they managed to pick up people, had some key guys. The people that are playing for the Patriots are playing at a level, some of those guys are playing at a level at least as good is the draft picks other people have tanked the season to get.
All those organizations, though, got a generational quarterback, and then once you have that, you just everything else kind of falls in place in football. Basketball, you have to have a generational superstar, and then you have to have a couple other complementary superstars, and the only way you can get those is if, one, they sign with you, like L.A. with LeBron, or two, you draft them with the number one pick. And even when you have the number one pick, sometimes they're not there. There's years where they don't exist.
Well, I'm
yeah, that's really the problem, is that the talent leap from the college to the NBA is so huge. And there are so few NBA players in college in the first place, which would suggest, you know, one of any number of things, but that, you know, perhaps the NBA is overexpanded so that you can't, you know, so that the tail end of the performance spectrum is really, really bad. It could also just be that there's so many international players that the tail end of the spectrum still has good players, or as, at least as good as anything you can get from college. So there's a lot of explanations that you can, you know, or hypotheses you can test. But in the end, you know, getting in the draft, your first round draft pick is no sure thing. You know, even in the NFL, you expect, if you're drafting late in the first round, you expect to get a really good player. You might not get an all-pro player that right away, but you expect to get somebody who's going to come in and start for you.
Well, the difference between the 30th best person in college football is dramatically different than the 30th best person in college basketball, especially when you're drafting all different classes of people of years.
It's dramatically different from the third best player in college basketball.
Well, a
lot of times the third best player in college basketball would be a first round pick in the NFL. It's just the NFL. You just have to be a healthy, really good athlete. You see guys just get plugged in all the time that were undrafted. It's because they're healthy and they're athletic at the end of the season. It's like you almost in certain positions in the NFL, you almost don't even have to be good. You just have to be a really good athlete and healthy.
But a first round pick, if you get the 22nd pick, you're getting the best guy at a position out of all of college. Right?
Right.
Soon if you draft.
Theoretically.
I mean, you're going to draft the best safety coming out of college. The guy's probably pretty darn good. Even if he's not as generationally good as the tackle that went number one or the quarterback that went number two. Right? He's still going to be pretty darn good.
He's still a heck of a ball player.
Well, I mean, here's the concern.
And when you have as many on the team as you do in the NFL, you don't need to be great at every position. You just need to be solid at every position and great at a few.
Well, that's true. You need one guy on the offensive line who can handle his guy. So now you have 4-on-3, right? You need somebody on the defensive line that needs two people. So now the rest of the guys can go against one. This is not that difficult, right?
I mean, right. The rest of the guys just have to be good. You know,
yeah.
Good at what they do. They don't have to be great ball players, but you know the way the NBA matches up. When you just look at how incredibly gifted these guys are, you can't be bad at any position. You can't be even mediocre in any position.
There's a lot.
Easy to get a great player isolated on that guy.
You know what though? You watch this stuff. I watch a lot of. There's three games on sometime nights that I wander up to the Tripoli, and some of these games, there are whole periods of time where in football you'd pull a guy off the field if he just didn't care if he missed his block and the quarterback got slaughtered. These guys, they go down, I'm not playing defense this time, and the guy walks right by him and dunks it. You know, nobody bothers to walk over. It's not as physically injurious to another player if you don't do your job like football, but there's times where if you had the ability to control these people, you'd pull somebody right off the floor. I mean, I didn't play defense that time. I didn't feel like it. I mean, to me, it's. I mean, I know, Kevin, you might have hit it on the head by saying there's too many teams, but I used to love basketball when the Bulls had slowing those guys. I mean, you know, we used to, you know, run over to Samari's Tap because they had the black and white antenna where they could get the games from Chicago. And imagine that, Matty, not only no cable, but you had like three things in South Bend. So you had to run down to Samari's, and they had the 60-foot-long antenna. You could get the black and white Bulls game from Chicago, WGN. And you'd watch these guys. But, I mean, the Bulls weren't terrific. They were middle of the pack. I mean, KC Omaha was the middle of the pack. Yet the good teams, they didn't want to go to KC Omaha and play these guys. I mean, you had Nate Archibald, you had that big center, you had a forward who was pretty good. I mean, they were a good team, and they came at you. The Bulls were the same way. I mean, Jerry Sloan never laid down because he wanted a first-round draft pick. I mean, every game was a game, even though you knew who was the better team. Now, these aren't even games.
Well, and circling back to our original conversation about coaches, who were the best coaches in late-game situations, the big skill for a head coach in the NBA is managing the players. In college basketball, it's teaching the game, getting people to play a certain way, and to just be fundamentally sound. In the NBA, the big skill is managing the egos. You know, it was the thing that Phil Jackson did better than anyone for so long. Is he could just channel these guys in the right direction, and so when you watch the Jordan era Bulls, you could watch 82 games during the regular season, you probably didn't see more than, two or three games where you looked and said, no, this isn't good basketball. There was good stuff in every game.
Well, sure.
Because they were motivated. But the problem is that you have a lot of coaches who just aren't any good at it. And, the best example I can give you is the Lakers, because Jackson was there twice. When Phil Jackson was there the first time, they were champions. When he left, they weren't. When he came back, they were again. It was the same group of people, but this was the guy that could keep them focused. And there's only a handful of coaches. Popovich is really good at it. I think Kerr seems to be pretty good at it. He's got his cast of star players, but he also has some dicey egos that he has to deal with, and he seems to keep it in check for the most part.
I think there was a little bit of a different atmosphere when the Bulls had Michael Jordan, and he had his foibles and his behavior issues. But fact is, when your best player, and arguably one of the top, top 3-4 pick out who they were, best players that ever played, comes out and says the best honor he ever got after 3 or 4 years was he finally made the all defense team. You're never going to see Harden saying that.
No, you're not.
No, James or Dennis Rodman, for all the craziness about the guy, the fact is he was a defensive specialist. Name me anybody in today's game who's proud of being a defensive specialist, except for maybe Butler.
Yeah, I actually disagree with you. I don't think Rodman was a defensive specialist. I think he was a rebounding specialist.
Well, but he played Series D. But, I'm saying it wasn't just...
Rodman would leave his man to go get a rebound because he had a lot of rebounding incentive clauses.
Okay, but my point is...
And he played to it. So there were times when he was not a good defender, but he would hit the boards really hard.
But he wasn't a first guy over half court shoots a three.
He definitely was not that, God, because he couldn't shoot.
The game was different, though, that no one shot threes as much as they do
now.
Well,
but I'm saying the game is the same. It's played different. Now, whether it's
better or
not...
Well, the games evolve. Every sport, the games evolve. The game is not the same.
Well, but what I'm saying is not playing defense, to me, is... not. I watch these games, I'm like... There are times when there's four people out front, one guy doesn't cover, and somebody runs in for a layup, and nobody comes anywhere near him. He beat his guy, he's in. That to me, there's no... Anyway, I'm just ranting a little bit, but anyway, where are we? S&P futures are still up $7. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Ali, just my word on the board with Mr. Kevin O'Neill. S&P futures up 7, NASDAQ futures up 76. NASDAQ futures up 33, Dow futures up 76. Now Trump says he might not stick to his March deadline on China tariffs. I tell you what, I would love to trade what this guy's saying. Now we have 2 days of rallies because we're not going to increase. Yesterday morning they were going to double the tariffs on March 1st, and now we might not raise them on March 1st if things are going good. This is, someday he's going to come back and write a book on this. I'd like to be the first guy to read it. It'll be pretty interesting. Europe, we got DAX up 9, so not much. Very call it flat. FTSE up 22.3%. CAC around up 9.2%. Over in Asia, we were up a bunch yesterday. NICAP another 281%. 21,144. These guys in danger of being under 20,000. Now they're over 21,000 in 2 days.
Chang Hai up 49.8%. Hang Seng up 326, that's 1.1%. But if you could just harness a tweet and trade these Asian markets based on it, you'd be a witch man. Oil up 47 cents, 53.57. Brent up 74, 63.16. Natural gas down another 9 cents, 259. Believe it or not, after this kind of crazed winter we've had in Chicago, natural gas is now lower than it was last July, which is startling after a trip through 455. RBOB gas, 144, that's up another penny. Home heating oil, 193. Last but not least, gold down 80 cents, not much. Silver down 4 cents. Gold still 1313, above 1300. Copper, they got a little bit of a move here. It's 277. It was under 270 last week. Again, there's still a lot of people looking at copper prices as a thing on China. I don't never really did that, but the fact that it's inching up a little bit probably means that some people think that the China situation is at least not as bad as it was. We'll be right back. Radio Matty Weber, stocks, traffic, weather, sports. Boy, I've talked out with all the stuff I'm talking about here, Matty.
Good Lord.
Now you're going to talk about accidents. It'll take you all morning, too.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're actually off to a decent start, although traffic is starting to build. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy from an accident standpoint. Same for the Eisenhower, Stevenson, Southside Expressways, all looking good. We did have some snow cover overnight and some slippery conditions, and now it's very cold this morning, so give yourself plenty of time as we imagine there's some slippery spots, especially in the side streets and exit ramps. But as far as the expressways are concerned, no accidents to report, just slow travel times as traffic volumes build. Off the expressways, we have a crash, Northwestern Burbs, Higgins Road, which is Route 72 at west, right off of I-290, right off of the Eisenhower Expressway. There is a crash on Higgins Road, so keep that in mind. That's a pretty busy area. Out in Naperville, College Road at Maple Avenue, there is an accident as well. In Aurora, there's a crash at Kirk Road and Wilson Street. And then in the North Shore, Lewis Avenue at 14th Street, there's ice on the roadway. A lot of ice in the northern suburbs on the side streets, so keep that in mind. Weather today, it's cold out there today. Right now it's partly cloudy and 16 degrees. The wind chill's right at zero. But we'll go up to a high of 31. Overcast skies, no signs of sun. We don't like the sun anyway. Going up to a high of 31 today. For our Phoenix listeners, overcast skies with a high of 72. Right now it's partly cloudy and 48. In sports, the Blackhawks' 7-game winning streak is over. They were doubled up in Boston last night. 6-3 was the final. Hawks jumped out to a 1-0 lead, but gave up 3 goals in a 4-minute stretch in the first period, and never really competed after that.
The game was not as close as the score would indicate.
And the score wasn't close either.
No.
Patrick Kane tied Stan Mikita's club record with a 15-game point streak. He had an assist last night to keep that going. So 15 games in a row for Patrick Kane scoring, but the Blackhawks lost. They're four games out of a playoff spot and several teams ahead of them as well. So odds are still against them, but playing a lot better. Coyotes beat the Vegas Golden Knights 5-2. NBA basketball, Bulls and Suns were both off. College hoops, DePaul lost big at home to Marquette, 92-73. And the big news locally of the morning, which we'll touch on with Josh Nelson coming up at 7:30, is the Cubs officially announced kind of what everyone knew what was coming. Their marquee TV network will debut 1 year from this month, February 2020, and it will exclusively carry all Cubs television broadcasts. Chief.
I will be for sure a Sox fan by then.
Yeah, how much is that going to cost me?
It's a good question.
I'm sure right now they want 5 hours a month, and they're beating up on the cable companies to get them into the one of the top two, not the basic, but the basic plus, same spot where the NBC network is right now, and they just want them to raise your bill and not have it something separate that makes it sound like you have to pay extra for the Cubs, would be my guess, is right where they are right now. Does that make sense? You don't want it to sound like it's a Cubs.
And you're not coming through pretty very loud. Are we? Do you need me to call back in?
No. I'm just maybe not close enough to the mic. The trick in all this stuff is to get the cable company to raise the rates on all the stuff and put you in one of the top few packages. The last thing the Cubs want to do is have all the other stuff the same as it was, and 5 hours more a month that you have to say okay for the Cubs. Because you're not going to get any female doing that. Well, not any. You're not getting very many. And that's what killed the...
I don't know about that. I know a lot of women who are Cubs fans.
What I'm saying is, if you break that part out, of it's huge. I've read so many statistics, especially in New York, for the whatever their big channel is for all the sports, that the amount of women living in Manhattan that pay extra for that is like non-existent. You're not home that much.
So what are we saying? Women have more sense than men?
If you're going to watch the Cubs every night, you're going to pay for it, basically. There's a lot of ladies who love watching the Cubs, but I don't know. I mean, I've never heard of Audrey saying, I got to hustle home to watch the Cubs. I don't know about Jill. Maddie, I'm thinking no either.
No.
She'll watch them if you're watching them, but that's about it.
Yeah, and I mean, there's guys like me and my friends that will pay. Don't want to, but will. There's some people that will consider it, and then there's some people that won't. If that's the route they're going to go, there's a lot of people that aren't going to do it, or they'll just watch them, you know, when they're at a bar or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm saying is the economic.
So
trick
we'll
is,
see. Are they a subscription channel of their own, or are they the cable provider has to subscribe and put it in a package?
I know for me, since I cut my cable 2 years ago, I'm going to have to pay something. I mean, if they're...
You're going to have to pay something, or it's going to be in some kind of sports package for, I don't know, YouTube TV or whatever other subscription someone chooses.
Exactly, yeah. But I like it that way. I want my stuff unbundled where I can pick and choose, and if I want something, I'll pay for it. I'm fine with that.
You're not going to be able to get cable and just get the Cubs.
No, I guarantee the Marquee Network will have an app for streaming. It's not even the future. That's where everything is now. For my generation, is the generation they're targeting right now. Or I'm actually older than that now, 25, 34.
So you're going to be getting it off the computer on the TV is what you're saying.
Yeah. Okay. That's where I get every channel that I have. I have the antenna for 257, you know, local stuff, and then I have, streaming via the Roku for everything else, and I pay for what I want.
Okay,
a la carte. So I assume that will be an option for people like me because it's a huge percentage of the market now.
Okay, and
it's a big percentage and growing.
And growing, right? I don't understand what your "and" is. My point is that I pay individually for everything. So this would just be another thing that I would pay for.
When is I'm like the least technologically knowledgeable of anybody on this show. At least everybody thinks that. What is this? Why is this so clear to me and not to anybody else? If 5 million people in Chicago decide to do that and use the app, all Comcast and Infinity are going to do is raise the rates for the cable, for the internet part of the package.
And then what's going to happen? You mean just for internet itself?
Yeah.
Yeah, but what's happening in the wireless world right now?
You're a long way from 5 million people in town watching a Cub game off their cell phone and having any kind of quality.
Where is that going, Tom? How much? How fast does the bandwidth availability grow now for wireless?
Funny you should mention that, my Michigan friend. I, without nameless or whatever, I've been talking to an awful. For those that. Think they might want to pile in, you sort of better pile in pretty quick because all of a sudden, I don't know because of the show or just people remembering, I'm putting people in the Protected Index program several a day. It hasn't been like this since 1998, where all of a sudden people decided they want to be protected in their portfolios, and it's a lot of work to get somebody up and moved and everything else, so it's a big deal. But I talked to a gentleman yesterday who happens to be I don't know what his background is, but he claims that an awful lot of the big fight with this Huawei, how do you pronounce it, Huawei?
Huawei, yep.
By the way, did she ever get out, the lady they arrested in Vancouver?
I don't know where she is now.
I don't know, Maddie, she's been fine. Is she still in jail or what? Anyway, the story behind the story, seems to be that Huawei recognized a lot faster. I mean, this guy was ready to put Apple at $50 because all they do is cell phones that are too expensive that eventually people aren't going to want because all this other stuff's going to be cheaper. So he was not an Apple guy. He didn't have any Apple in his account. Imagine that. But he claims that Huawei has accumulated virtually all of the 5 gig speed. in this
5G speeds, yeah.
In this country. And it's a big deal that now we're trying to figure out, well, how do we let these guys get all these patents? And are they going to find a way to try and steal them from them or whatever? But he claims we can't have five gig in this country without them. Because they've managed to buy up. They had the patents. They saw it ahead of everybody else. They got a lot of the patents. And nobody else can put up a system without going through them. I don't know if that's true or not, but if it is, yeah,
I don't know either, but that's an interesting perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, my theory on patents, they've never worked anyway. They only work for some people, not for others. But anyway, what I'm saying is...
Right. But let's go back, and when you say not everybody's going to do it through their cell phone, you realize that you can buy cellular devices that are high-speed devices, and you can subscribe, and, you know, and they aren't that expensive.
Okay, well, the
devices themselves, as well as the, you know, to be able to get service at high bandwidth.
What?
Yeah, we're not going to get pushed... We're not going to continually get pushed around by the cable company. We're beating them right now, and then when they do inevitably raise the internet, like you said, which we all know, by the way, I don't know why you're thinking we don't know that. Then we're gonna find the next thing.
The thing that frosts me, because you two guys are, you know, I don't get how as I rail every morning, for God's sake, to the point where people are probably tired of listening to it, about these combinations. Don't you get that there's three people, four firms that control the cable, the TV, and the atmosphere? They're just going to buy, you know, they're the same people. AT&T comes down the alley, they provide some of the content, and oh, by the way, half the people in this country get their phone from AT&T. You're not going to outsmart them.
No one's outsmarting anyone. The fact is that right now, when I switched off a cable, I was paying $170 a month. Now I pay about $105 a month. That was 2 years ago. I'm still saving $65 a month. Now, eventually, do I think that they will catch up? Yes, but they're a slow-moving conglomerate years behind, and hopefully I'll have the next thing by the time they catch up.
And I'm going to lob one at you. When you look at what you're paying for now, and you look at your last cable bill, what you're not paying is the 40 to 45 hours in tax that you paid with the land cable, because the city hasn't found a way to tax the stuff that comes over the air as much.
Right. So I'm not saying I'm outsmarting anyone, but I'm saving a lot of money. And then eventually, when they do catch up, I'll find the next
thing.
But
it'll be the city that catches up. That's the reason why if you get a dish, you're cheaper than the cable, because there's some, was it a Supreme Court thing? It'll probably change someday that you can't charge, a city can't charge something coming from essentially the ether. So if you get a dish, it's the reason why they're $40 cheaper a month than cable is because you don't pay tax on it as much.
That's big part of it, yeah.
Yeah, but
not all of it.
I'm saying the point is that the people, you're not going to outsmart AT&T. That's why they bought the satellite. That's why they come down the alley, right?
No one said we're outsmarting anyone.
Okay.
What we said was we're ahead of them right now, and then when they catch up, we'll try to find the next thing to keep ahead of them.
You're ahead of the Ram Father, and don't believe for a second he's not after.
We're ahead of both.
Okay.
I literally went from 170 to 105.
What I'm saying is if
and that was 2 years ago, and I'm still...
What I'm saying is if you look at the actual stuff you're paying for content, you're probably very close if you take the tax piece out of it.
It's probably close. It's still cheaper.
That may be true, Tom. But then it doesn't matter if that's starting to eat Comcast's lunch. Then what's Comcast going to do to punch back?
They're going to raise the cost of the stuff coming down the alley like they always do.
Or if they want to get if they want to keep content business, then they're going to have to lower their price. The overall price, they're going to have to get the overall price down to where it's competitive with over the air, even if that means that they have to cut their own part of the price structure very, very low, because if they don't do it, then they aren't going to have any business.
My point is I don't know why I'm being so obtuse here, is you look what's happening to your electric bill and to your gas bill. Okay, right now, they don't care if I use any electric or any gas. The hookup to the street, they've talked the state into saying, I could put the biggest windmill on top of my place and give it to my neighbors. They don't care. because they're charging me for a hookup. If I have to pile into one once a year when the wind stops, they don't care. What I'm saying is it's going to come a point where you're going to pay for you know, $100 a month for the hookup into the alley from Comcast or from Infinity. Do you want cable? You want computer? You want porn? Whatever you want, we don't care. It's cost $100 to pile in because we're the only guy in the alley. I'm not trying to argue just to be arguing. I'm just.
But what's your point?
My point is, you know, you can't get away from a conglomerate.
I know that eventually they're going to catch up, but I've gotten away for 2 years and counting.
And I'm thinking I'm going to guess,
and so I'm way ahead right now. And then hopefully, you know, in an open market, there's going to be other options when they do catch up.
I'm not trying to burst your bubble. What I'm saying is,
but you're not bursting my bubble. You're just angry that you haven't done it.
No, I'm not.
So you're saying
no, I'm not. I'm aware I'm paying this city a bunch of dough. But I'm saying if you take the tax piece out, you're actually saving $15-$20. And the $15-$20 you're saving, You can look at all the stuff you don't have that I have and say it might be worth that. You're not getting CNBC. You're not getting all that stuff if anybody want to watch it.
I have all of that.
Okay.
I don't watch it, but I have it.
I'm going to say I have a few more channels than you, but just saying.
You might. I don't know, because I have Fubo, so I have like 150 channels, and then I have HBO, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime, all that. So.
I mean, you guys understand more about this than most people, but I've heard people say, man, I cut the cord. Look what I'm getting. You can't get anything. All it's going to be is there's one person. That's why I don't understand why we let AT&T buy DirecTV. You know, my stuff has a theme to it. Because now you can't even, now what are we going to do when Comcast decides they have to buy Dish just to compete? Then what? And then Comcast buys a Sprint, and who's the other guy they just got together with? Sprint and T-Mobile. Then what? Then you really think by going from one to the other, you're going to save?
Yeah, I do, because I also think that the cost of putting a satellite in the air is falling dramatically and will continue to fall dramatically. So if AT&T wants to jack up the satellite prices, then you know there will be alternatives because it isn't that expensive to provide an alternative compared to what it once was.
If it's so cheap, how come there hasn't been one in 35 years?
It isn't there yet. It's moving there.
Okay.
I think Kevin and I believe in the free market, and Chief doesn't.
I believe in the free market probably
damn
more
communist.
Than, yeah. I believe in the free market probably more than either one of you, but I recognize how powerful these people have become. I've seen it happen in my industry. The free market doesn't exist in my industry because three or four people took it over. Same things happen in the communication industry. But to get back to what I was saying about just a quick review, when you watch Dr. J.
This is all the Cubs' fault, this whole conversation,
yeah.
By the way.
Well, I mean, when you watch Dr. J on CNBC, you'll find out that those guys, the commercials are important to them, but not very important to them. Because if you go buy a cable, and I haven't priced one out for a while, the first layer is, you know, the 1995 one is basically your local channels plus, what, maybe four or five channels and then all the shopping crap that those people actually pay for, right? That's like the first layer. The second layer would be your CNBC, your History Channel, your, it's one that has all the reruns on it. I don't know. The ones that have the reruns on them, that's your second layer. Well, your CNBC and your CNN, those guys are in that second layer. So CNBC, unbeknownst to anybody who has cable, if you thought about it, you'd realize, are probably getting, what would you guess, Kevin? 20 cents, 25 cents a month, 15 cents from every single house in the country, something like that. Now, which doesn't seem like a lot, but I'm going to say that half to two-thirds of all the people who have CNBC have never once watched it. I don't think. When did I watch it? I watched. I think I watched CNN once. I've never. But my point is they're getting this money from this spot. Now the next layer, I believe, has Bloomberg business in it. So the advertising is much more important to Bloomberg. I mean, I'm talking about Fox Business. They're not in the second layer, so they're always. They're always chasing the hind end of CNBC, no matter what they say, because they're not in that group. They're not getting paid that money over the top. Now, Bloomberg Business, I think, has to pay to be on cable. They're like the home shopping.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's entirely true in that example, though, Tom. I know Maria Bartiromo's winning her time slot now, and she's beaten CNBC.
She's on Fox. So
that's got to be pretty widely available.
I think she's on Fox News. She's not on Fox Business.
She's on Fox Business.
Okay, well, I'm saying they're not
she's
in the same
Fox level. Business right now.
Well, some of the people are there. They force the Fox Business. Fox takes a hit just to get the business on. They're not necessarily in all the cable companies on the same level as, or they weren't. Now, Bloomberg definitely is not. So take Bloomberg as the example. They're definitely not in the second tier. So you won't find them, you know, pretty much anywhere unless you really have like the tier that has the business tier. What I'm saying is where you are. So with the Cubs, long story short, way too late. What the Cubs want to have happen is for my group, Infinity, to say, okay, we'll let the Cubs, everybody wants to watch the Cubs, we need them, we'll bring them in the second tier, just like the Sports Channel was, and we're going to pay the Cubs 5 hours a month. We're going to send everybody a bill. We're going to send Tom Howell a bill saying the cable's up $5 rather than
that
saying,
would be ideal for the Cubs.
That would be ideal for the Cubs. They don't want them to say, the Cubs want an extra $5. Do you want to send us an extra $5? That's not what they're looking
for.
But
that's for. What happened in L.A.
Right.
And where the cable company blamed the Dodgers. And
right.
People were like, screw it. I don't want it then.
Right. If it becomes an extra, I think they got a problem. At least they'll be, let's put it this way, they'll be under budget. It doesn't mean that they'll lose money. You know what I'm saying?
I was going to say, they're going to make money on this regardless.
Yeah. They're running a huge popularity thing. There's no doubt about that.
The question for the Cubs network is going to be, will there be an a la carte version of it that might have some different programming, maybe perhaps other than commercials? As an example, so that when they break, you get their studio people talking about the game. I don't know if that's going to be part of it. Is there going to be something different on the live stream that you don't see different from, you know, what's televised or broadcast in the more traditional sense? I don't know, but I think it's going to be interesting to see what their offering ultimately is.
That's the features I'm seeing. I will
stay
say
tuned because Josh Nelson knows a lot about this, and we'll talk to him at 7:30.
I will say this: nobody's too big to fall. Not even the Cubs. Boxing was the biggest thing ever. Nobody watches a boxing thing anymore. As the futures up 675, Dow futures up 77. As the futures up 32. I don't think that's going to happen to my beloved baseball, but hubris has been around since the Greek tragedies. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at ptisecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@ptisecurities.com. That's john@ptisecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Well, what makes Stocks and Jocks? I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Weber, we also have Professor Al Snar on the line. SP Futures up 7. NASDAQ Futures up 76. Dow Futures up 76. NASDAQ Futures up 30. Matty, I'm going to say, in regards to the Cubs, you're familiar with the term hubris?
Sure.
What is the Greek definition?
Of hubris?
Yes. Yeah, I'm sure Al knows.
It's isn't it just like being cocky or overconfident?
Well, it's turned into excessive pride or self-confidence, but in Greek tragedy, it was at a point where you were in defiance of the gods or thought you were equal to the god,
That would be the ultimate cockiness.
Yeah, and which always brought upon, you know, the nemesis that would come and basically stick you in the behind. And I'm going to say that the rickets are pushing it, in my mind. Just saying.
By launching a cable network?
No, you had to give them the neighborhood.
So I hate the Ricketts family, because of their politics. I think the old man's an old racist, all the super PAC stuff. I really don't like him. However, Tom and, the actual folks that run the organization have done such a good job and brought a World Series. I'll love Tom forever.
Okay. That's fine.
That's my personal.
Well, opinion. I love Hal forever. Hal, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well.
What's a good word? What are you teaching people? What's all the news that's fit to print out in your neck of the woods?
Well, I'm teaching two principles of macroeconomics classes, and then I'm teaching IT again. I always teach IT.
Really? Good for you.
Yeah.
What
big data, database management, some Python, some visualizations.
All the stuff I know nothing about. I should come take your class. What level is it? Would I be the total dunce?
We're a small liberal arts college, and we have, in terms of quantitative skills, we have really creative kids because we have this really great art program and theater program and music program. So we have these kids that are really great at that stuff, and they tend not to be very good at quantitative stuff. And then we have some quantitative kids that that aren't so great at the creative stuff. So we have these really extreme bimodal distributions in terms of quantitative skill. So what I've done is I've really tailored my teaching around that. So I can make the things fun for the quantitative kids and not lose the creative kids. So you would have a fun time in the class.
Manny, I think Hal just told me, and I'm getting good at this interpretation stuff. He just told me that I would be a dunce, but I wouldn't be the only one. That essentially what he said, and I'd enjoy myself, and I'd walk out with a hook. Let's see.
You guys would be all right. You would have fun in there. You really would. I think I've come up with a really cool way of reaching both groups without losing either. My first couple years here, man, I got pummeled. I'd make an adjustment, and the creative kids would improve and like it, but the quantitative kids, they're like, man, this is boring. It's too slow. But after about, you know, 5-6 years, I think I gotten pretty good at it, reaching both at the same time. And it's a balance you have to, it's a balancing act, you know, and, but I think I've gotten pretty good at it. So I think you guys would do alright and you'd have a blast.
Imagine.
It'd be a lot of code writing. Right now my 300 students are writing a bunch of, Python scripts, and it's screenshots, so they can't copy and paste it into Python and just run it without typing it. They have to type like 3 pages of code, and it's brutal. But the more you type it, the better you get at it.
Imagine if you were a nun, like in the 50s and 60s in some of these neighborhoods, that had 40 to 45 people in your class, and a few of the kids were essentially Ivy League bound, and a few of the kids were not sure where they were bound.
I was in that latter group you're talking about. I mean, I was the guy that goofed off And I think because of that, I think I could reach those kids. I've been on that end. I've been on the downward spiral when I got out of the Navy, man. I was actually thinking about jumping in my 68 Ford pickup truck with a cab over camper and just fishing and working as a dishwasher the rest of my life and trying to write. I mean, that's where I was in my mid-20s. So I think I could reach them.
I'm not so sure you've totally grown out of that, just saying. instead of the small...
Well, I'm married, so I have to by marriage. I have to grow out of it.
Well, you still got, instead of the pickup truck, you bought the big camper. What's the difference?
Yeah, man, if I could live in the camper, I think I would, but I got 4 kids and a wife, so I can't.
Well, which is more bothersome? Just saying, you know.
I think, again, striking a happy balance, getting my wife out every once in a while in the motorhome is fun, and we're going to take it on the road this summer.
Kids like so it?
We'll be in Chicago and Michigan this summer.
Oh, cool. We'll be happy to see you, bud. Hey, yeah. I got a question. If you're teaching classical macroeconomics, what in God's name do you use as a real world example for how it's supposed to work?
honestly, right now, I'm doing a really careful review of microeconomics, demand and supply.
Yep.
Because I think a lot of the problems with the way microeconomics is taught, everybody along the demand curve or a labor supply curve, they're considered like these homogeneous globules where they're all identical. And so what I do is I kind of reteach that stuff. And I talk about how the rich people are on the top left part of the demand curve and poor people are down in the bottom right-hand corner, because the demand curve is really willingness to pay, right? That's what it's really capturing at a moment in time.
Or ability to pay.
Exactly. The ability to pay or willingness to pay. And poor people have low willingness to pay and rich people have high willingness to pay. And the reverse is this. The reverse is the case for labor supply curves. You have poor people with low reservation wages on the left and rich people with high reservation wages on the right. So I'm going through that. And so students really understand demand, labor demand, labor supply, and product supply.
You know what?
A real careful job of that.
When you land here, what I will show you over coffee and adult beverage, whatever is your point, I still have... Believe it or not, buried in my bookcase,
voluminous files.
Well, Matty knows. He's seen my incredible book collection of stuff that no one else would ever read.
When's the last time you moved, Tom?
It's been a while.
Yeah, so I can imagine it's pretty huge.
Well, I'll tell you what. I would have nothing compared to one of my buddies from the Federal Reserve, who I absolutely have to introduce you to.
Yeah.
When he moved, it was like 3 months on his books.
Holy smokes.
And like, every time he looked one to see whether he could throw it out, he'd like read a chapter. They'd say, now I know why I kept this book. He's like, oh my God. But I actually have, one of the classes I took was a was essentially supply or whatever you want to call it, economics, what you're talking about from Milton Friedman, real high end, but it was, he never turned it into a book. It was still sort of a manuscript.
Oh, wow.
And,
that'd be really cool.
And it's, but it's super high end calc and everything else, which I never, I didn't understand at the time. And, you know, I will say this, Al, when I was a freshman at Notre Dame, all the people who took the pretty high-end calc, not the math guys, but right up there, the guys who were doctors and engineers and stuff, I came in, I was like, out of 300 people, I was like fifth, in the top 10 on my freshman year.
Oh, well,
there, yeah. But there is no, if you don't do something with calc, there is no reinforcement anywhere. I mean, if you learn how to add, you're going to add the rest of your life. You don't lose the ability.
No, you don't. Yeah, my PhD notebooks are what 15 years old now. I still have them all. I have one for every class, and they're 3 inches thick, and they're just filled with all kinds of calculus and linear algebra proofs. It's just crazy. I loved it. I mean, it was a blast.
But I couldn't. 3 years later, I didn't recall any of that stuff.
Well, you have to use it.
Yeah,
if you don't use it, you're going to lose it.
I just totally lost it. And but all this stuff that I learned from my economics professors, it's if it struck a chord, it's like it was yesterday.
Yeah,
and I remember the principles. But you dropped a derivative in front of me, I'd say, "What the hell is that?" I wouldn't even know. You know, I mean,
the funny thing about me, Tom, is when I was doing my PhD program and I was doing all kinds of n-dimensional calculus. Man, the derivatives were easy. I just don't know how to interpret it when I was in graduate school. So I would work with a student who had a really solid undergraduate economics experience, and I had this really solid graduate level math experience, and we worked together, and she was great and I was great. I'd do all the math and I would give her my notes and she would fill in all the economic interpretation. So we partnered up pretty well.
Well, they had when I got in grad school, I took some of the stuff which I never why I did it. I took a lot of linear programming and quadratic programming, and but the hardest one was the integer programming.
Well, that was before computers, wasn't it?
Well, you know what? Funny you should mention it. The integer programming was solving any of the problems was beyond the scope of the course.
Wow!
You just had to set them up because one of the hardest when you got to that level of whatever mathematics these guys were in. There's different levels of mathematics. There's stuff where you come to an answer, but other stuff where you're just kind of these maximization, minimization things.
Oh, that's fun stuff.
It's serious stuff. But the difference between integer programming, Maddie, is if you're doing the stuff for United Airlines and you're trying to maximize the use of pilots per plane, you can't show up with half a pilot. So it can't be 1.1 pilots. It's got to be one or two. So
or you change the scale.
Yeah, you can change the scale, but the
1.1 can be 1,100, right?
But the one that this guy was all fired up on it, and they had a couple guys there that finally the cat's ass of problems to solve was something called remember the salesman coloring problem?
I don't know if I remember that one.
And so these guys were all into it. It was the real high end. You have any idea what that is, Manny?
No, I missed it.
A salesman coloring problem?
No, what's that?
Is if you are selling booze for Maddie Weber's beverage shop, and you had to make 30 calls in the next day, how you could minimize the amount of distance from a randomly scattered 30 people, 30 places you had to go see?
Huh.
It's incredibly difficult to do. For decades, people couldn't do it.
Well, there's a Netflix algorithm documentary that talks about trying to solve those minimum distance problems. And what these biologists did is they hooked up bees to these little RFK tags or transmitters, and they figured, well, bees have been doing it for, you know, hundreds of millions of years. Why not, let's learn from them and see if they figured it out. And the funny thing is the bees haven't really figured it out either, but just because of natural selection, they've gotten really good at doing it kind of in a subjective way.
Well, I'll bet that most people who did that for a living, I know a couple guys, in fact, Jean Morabito, who's been on the show, she's the director of admissions for University of Michigan Engineering School. Mm. Her dad was one of these guys that sold football, athletic equipment to high schools and stuff back in the day before there was catalogs. So he would go from high school to high school, and he'd probably go see 15 of them a day on a big day.
Wow.
And so I'm sure he had a real subjective idea which one to go to first and that type of thing. But it's a different kind of math, man. I'm not going to get into the math too much.
But
you do when you get there, you try the first one and then you pivot. You know, there's no number there. It's a pivoting sort of thing, and then you try to the next three, then you pivot back and see. But it's all about getting to a place, trying it, and backing off. Which is, I don't know what that. I couldn't understand it at the time. It has nothing to do with, you know, multiplication or division where you come up with an answer.
No, not at all. Yeah.
It has to do with this constant maximum minimum thing and trying the directions and backing and forth and having to program the thing. So at the end of the day, with all these different pivots, you get to a maximum solution. But the guys could not do that for decades. It was a huge deal for Chicago for the first
time. I remember doing that in a combinatorics. We didn't call it the salesman colorization problem. It was just a minimum path problem. A lot of firms like UPS outside of New York will just set up their delivery routes by just making sure that the truck is mostly doing right turns, because it's all about minimizing idling at intersections. They never want to take left turns, so they'll just set it up where you take a right turn from when you leave the distribution, where you pick up all your packages, and just make right turns all the way until you get back to the distribution plant.
Well, when I used to drive downtown from where I lived on the south side, I would take two different streets to the expressway, because one was right turns and one was right turns going down there, and the other was right turns coming back.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what a lot of firms do, because for them it's more about minimizing gas and, you know, emissions, gas consumption emissions.
Well, plus you're less time at the light.
Yeah, exactly. You can't take left turns in a lot of places.
Right. So, all right. Now, what's we're going? We have the. I'm going to lob one at you. I'm not trying to lead the witness, but I am stunned at what just happened to the Fed in the last month or two, with everybody jumping all over Powell in December, you know, and everybody all day long talking heads, should we fire him? The change we've gone from, he was down to 3.5% money supply growth, and then he's popped up in some areas in a month to where it's 4.5, pushing 5, and actually I caught 1 week it was a 6, but he's back down to 4.9 or whatever.
Well, I think that money supply growth is not really due to anything the Fed's doing. They just kind of put a pause on interest rate hikes. And if you look at excess reserves, man, they're really coming out of the system now. So I think a lot of that pop in the money supply growth is the Fed basically kind of like bullied into not raising interest rates and just people feeling better. I think consumer confidence is at like a record high, or I forget what level of confidence that. Bank lending is soaring, so there's a lot of confidence out there.
Well,
I think it's just the reserves coming out of the banking system.
Well, if you look at the consumer confidence number, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I read some article where a guy's predicting this big recession, and I'm like, why the hell is he doing that? Well, evidently, in the consumer confidence number, and it's only happened, who knows, I'm doing this by memory, it's only happened like two or three times in the past. The confidence number in the interview, the confidence number that Hal Snar said, are you confident right now? Yeah. What about a year from now? The spread between people's view of a year from now and today has like never been higher to the bad side.
Yeah.
Which is really strange. I mean, I don't know why that is.
But maybe people are reading a lot, and there, you know, information on the internet is easily accessible. People share things on Twitter. People share things on Facebook. And maybe it has something to do with that. People are like, well, it's great right now, but all these people are saying, hey, we got an election coming up. And maybe people, going back to that subject of probability thing with the minimum distance path algorithm, maybe people have formed subjective probabilities that election's coming up. The people that run the government, the people that populate the Fed, the people that populate the bureaucracies, you know, they're kind of like I'm thinking, this is just a hypothesis, but I'm going to test it next year. But if you go back to 2016, all these people doing these polls, I think what was going on is they were saying, there's no way he can win. There's no way he can win. And so the polls were kind of biased in the states against Trump winning. Is that going to happen within the policymaking branches of government at the Fed? Because, you know, most people at the Fed, they're probably progressive, left-of-center kind of people. And it's not that they're doing it explicitly. It's that he's so repugnant that we got to stop him kind of mentality. And I'm kind of interested to see if that recession shows up in 2020 for those reasons.
You know, I don't think the you can do a lot with words, but I don't really see. Have you read, maybe you, out of all the people I have on, you probably have, so I'm not going to accuse you of that. So you probably nutty enough to have read the same thing I did. Take that as a compliment, by the way. The post-mortem on the polls on the Brexit.
You know, I haven't gotten into that at all. Huh?
It's pretty fascinating because they're talking about how they did the polls. And they normally did the polls, and they go with the because polls are essentially people who are it's percentage of people who are likely to vote. Right? Is how they well they screwed up on the Brexit is like some number. And again, as Maddie, remember when I first told the story, was it 2-3 million people voted? Maybe not quite that high. 1.5-2 million people voted. That have literally have not voted in 20 years.
Well, it's the same thing that happened in the 2016 election.
Yeah, that's my point.
Exactly the same thing.
If you read what happened over there, I think it's the same thing that happened here. And, yeah. and if that's the truth, it's not that the polls were biased.
Yeah.
These people just came out of the woodwork. Now the difference there, I think, is, and I don't know, I haven't toured.
Tom, the problem with that is, I actually was thinking that was going on in 2016. Which is why I did a pretty good job of picking the Electoral College map and the results, because I was thinking that, right? Who was Trump reaching? He was reaching people all on the Appalachian Trail who had probably never voted before. Now, he lost a lot of Christian voters because of the videos and the audio tapes, but he was reaching people who probably never, ever voted before because, you know, they're thinking, these Republicans and Democrats are the same, but Trump is speaking to them specifically. And I was thinking, and I was tweeting and I was Facebooking about the fact that these polls were not picking up these people who are going to come out in millions and vote for Trump because he was speaking their language.
It's still worth watching the Michael Moore tape from before the
election. Yeah. That's exactly the kind of stuff I'm talking about. Yep. Michael Moore, he saw the angst in the people that had never voted before. And, you know, those counties, he had 80-20, 60-40 wins in a lot of those counties all along the Appalachian.
Did you... it's interesting because of the people. I'll run this real quick for you, see if you agree. Newt Gingrich came out, I mentioned this before, said the Trump phenomenon is an exact follow-up of the Obama phenomenon.
It is. It's a counter-reaction to it.
Obama, first-term senator, didn't have a chance to be co-opted.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, that didn't work. He was co-opted. Now we're getting a guy from totally the outside.
Yeah.
But the interesting part, did you watch... I can't tell. What's the two shows that are on Sunday morning? Face the Nation, and what's the other one?
Meet the Press.
Meet the Press, and they. What's the one the lady does? But she had four young people. There were two women, two guys, that just got elected as the Democrats in November. And they tell you what, Al, bright people, and actually they had some Republicans on the week before. Same thing. This new class in government is pretty sharp. I mean, maybe there's hope for us. I mean, you think there's hope.
But Mr. Smith goes to Washington, right?
Well, I mean, they're not co-opted yet, but one of the guys, and I felt sorry for him because he looks just like Putin.
Are you talking about the one without his shirt on?
No. Is he on horseback?
No.
Cutting a grizzly bear open with his knife and eating the heart?
Well, he was showing films of him playing hockey and the goalie running the other way from the puck so he could score it. The lady said, what was your campaign like? He goes, that's easy. The same campaign Trump ran.
Yeah.
And she goes, what are you talking about? She goes, nobody's happy with what's going on in Washington. We just said we're going there. We're young. I'm gonna rock the boat. These guys are nuts. Yeah. They're not representing you. I'm gonna represent you. He goes, it's the exact same message.
Yeah.
For four elections in a row now.
Well, you know, the next president might be somebody that has no experience in office whatsoever. No elected office. If Michelle Obama runs for the Democratic nomination, I bet she wins it. And she'll have zero elected experience.
Well, I'm funny. What do you think about that? Now, to me, I think that that's the people who have done real, I'm going to say really work in this country and turned us when we really needed them to be turned. We're not idiots that look good with a big mouth, male or female. They were people that had, I think Franklin Roosevelt, obviously he was in a wheelchair, but the guy was drop dead brilliant and had all kinds of experience.
Yeah.
Same way with Abraham Lincoln, same way with George Washington. I mean, the idea that we've dumbed down the presidency. Obviously, in my mind, arguably the hardest job in the world that can be done by a guy coming out of a trailer park in a degotee. I don't see that, or some lady who just happens to say the right thing on the you know, on the campaign trail. This is a real job, where if you do it right, you're reading the equivalent of a Victorian novel a day.
It's a real job. You look at Obama before he was president and after he was president, man, it looked like he gained 30 years in age.
Yeah.
And the same thing with George Bush. The funny thing about Trump, he doesn't look like he's getting any older. Well, maybe he's just keeping his face dyed and his hair red, right?
So his hair,
whatever.
Did you
see that picture where someone removed the makeup and removed the fake hair? And what he would actually look like with his real skin color? And oh, my God, it was atrocious.
You know, I think he loves mixing it up, man. I don't think anybody gets under his skin. I think he likes to be the center of attention, whether it's good or bad. Right? That's why he just keeps tweeting.
Well, that's clear.
I think he just gets off on it.
But why do people in general... I mean, you know the football player. Everybody sitting there with a beer thinks they could be Tom Brady.
Yeah.
No, you can't. I mean, everybody thinks I could easily be a college professor like Hal Snar. No, you can't. I mean, when somebody says, I can work a board, you can't be Manny Weber. He's really good at it. I don't think that there's 25 people in the world that no options is applied to retail people like I do. It's probably not even 25.
Yeah, I don't know what you just said there, Tom.
You know, I'm saying this, but everybody thinks they can be president. No, you can't.
I know.
I mean,
yeah.
You can, but not be a very good one, maybe. I can't imagine how, as much as you and I have spent our lives pretty much studying everything in front of us, how far away I think I would be to be qualified for that job.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't think I'd... I wouldn't want that kind of job. There's just no way. I like my privacy. I felt bad for Michael Jordan. I read the story about Michael Jordan. He'd go to a mall, and he couldn't even go to a mall because he's so recognizable in the 1990s. Maybe he can now, but, man, I would hate to go any place and have swarms of people just around me. I can understand why people in Hollywood have bouts of depression because... One minute they're being followed by the paparazzi, and the next minute they're discarded. I mean, I would just hate that kind of life. I like being with my kids and my wife, and that's all I want to be around. Well, my students in class, but
I think though there's a Maddie. You know more about this. When I was in New York the first time, there's this huge crowd in front of the store, and they're like, "Well, what's going on in there? Is there a fire? I don't know. Some movie star was in the store." And I said, "So what? Let the person shop." I've never really seen that in Chicago, man. I've been in restaurants where where you could recognize a celebrity over there, and people don't bug them. It's not like New York and L.A. I think they want to be bugged. I don't know. Do you notice a difference or not?
I think you're right.
I mean,
you know, my wife and I ran into Spike Lee at the big DVD store or music store in Times Square on Labor Day weekend. And I walk up to Spike. I recognize him from behind. I was like, "That's Spike Lee." She goes, "No, it's not." My wife's a big Spike Lee fan. I walk up to Spike Lee and I go, "Hey, Spike, Mr. Lee, hey, my wife would like to take a picture with you." He's just a regular guy to me, right?
Well, yeah.
But my wife is all jittery and really excited. He goes, "I don't work on Labor Day weekend."
God. I shook hands with Frank O'Hara.
That was classic. I loved it.
I shook hands with Frank O'Hara in Vegas. But he was standing there like he was looking for somebody. And I just walked by and I said, I said, "Do you need any help?" is what I said. He goes, "I'm looking for like the front door." And I go, because he had just come in. And I said, you go out that way if you're looking for the street. By the way, are you Franco Harris?" "Yeah, I am." "Tom Howell." Just shook hands, and that was it. I mean, I wasn't an idiot or anything. At least I don't think I was. Hal, thank you very much. Good having you back on, buddy, as usual. Good.
Thank you.
Next time you're in town, I will show you that book. We have Mr. Josh Nelson after the break, and we'll learn more about the stuff that we've been arguing. I'm sure we were wrong. SP Futures up 4.25. Be right back. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Out. Mr. Matt Weber. We have Mr. Josh Nelson in a second. S&P futures up 525. The Nasdaq futures up 627. Dow futures up 65. He said the CPI for January came up unchanged versus expectations of a 0.1% gain. I'm just saying, Manny. If you don't count medical stuff, if you don't count housing, and you don't count much in terms of college education, you get a little bit of a different number than maybe if you didn't. DAX up 30 points. Just saying, Manny. Just saying. Up 0.3%. FTSE up 38.5%. CAC around up 19.4. So bullishness across, big bullishness over in Asia. Nikkei up 280, 21,144, over 21,000 now. Was in danger of going under 20,000 like 3 days ago, but obviously we're, the latest news is that President Xi is gonna meet with, our people that are over there, Lighthizer and Munchkin. So that's probably considered to be positive by most people. Shanghai up 49, that's 1.8.
Lighthizer and Munchkin.
What is it?
That sounds like a, it sounds like a cop show.
Well, Mnuchin is the one guy's name. But with the
I
other,
know.
Is the other guy light? It is Lighthouse, right? It's a lot of stuff to say.
I know. It was just fun to keep going.
Hang Seng up 326, 1.1%. We got oil is actually up another 31 cents today, 53.41. So it's creeping back toward that 55 level. We'll see if it makes it. Brent up 54, 62.96. That spread is now, if I can do the math, $9.50. Wow, it was like $7.50 a couple of weeks ago. Natural gas, $2.59, below where it was in July, despite the polar vortex, despite all this crazy weather we've had. RBOB, $1.43. Home heating oil, $1.92. Last but not least, gold down $1.10. Silver down 3 cents. Manny, what do you got for us? Trevi Weather Sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Heavy traffic volumes building on the Edens, Kennedy, and Eisenhower specifically. No accidents to report, but slow travel times out there. A lot of slick
snow-covered conditions on the side streets, and people are taking their time getting in this morning, so keep that in mind. Southside expressways are looking okay. We've actually been pretty quiet as far as accidents are concerned, so that's good to know on the area expressways, but still very slow moving, high traffic volumes as we head into the morning rush. Significant crash off the expressways. Northwestern suburbs, Algonquin Road at Weber Drive, there's a car versus a pole situation. We assume the pole won that confrontation, but that has crews on the scene, and hopefully that driver is okay, but that's causing delays on Algonquin Road. Further northwest than that, out near Oakwood Hills, there's an accident, Northwest Highway at Algonquin Road as well. So a couple of crashes there in the northwestern suburbs. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, we have some sunshine early before we turn overcast, a high of 31. Right now it is clear and 17 degrees downtown. Wind chill feels like it's 1 degree. For our Phoenix listeners, overcast with a high of 72. Right now it's partly cloudy and 49. In sports, Blackhawks' 7-game winning streak is over. They were doubled up in Boston 6-3. Patrick Kane did extend his point streak, though, to 15 consecutive games, tying Stan Mikita's club record. Patrick Kane will look to break that later on this week. Coyotes beat the Vegas Golden Knights 5-2. Bulls and Suns were both off. College hoops, DePaul lost big at home to Marquette 92-73. And as we touched on a bit earlier, and we'll continue with Josh here in a minute, the Cubs officially announced what everyone knew was coming. Their marquee network will go into effect February of 2020, so a year from now, and will exclusively carry all of their television broadcasts. Chief.
Josh, how are you?
Hello, thank you for having me on.
Yeah, hey, is there something wrong with me that I sort of wish that this thing bombs what the Cubs are doing, and and that people should be able to watch some of this? And let me ask you this: we have a lot of stuff for you. We only got a half hour, but why do you think that the two most powerful leagues, although many could probably say NBA is close, are football and baseball, and one of them is absolutely wedded to free TV, except for Monday night. And the other one is absolutely convinced they got.
You've already asked him this.
I know, but
Advertising.
The advertising.
The other leagues can't sell the big time advertising on free TV like the NFL can. That's the difference.
All right. Yet people.
Next question.
Yet people are willing to pay for it monthly. I guess I'm a little unclear on the research that they are getting, Josh, that says this is a really good idea.
Well, they just looked at other teams that have done it in the league, like the Los Angeles Dodgers and the New York Yankees, and seen that they have generated a lot of revenue for them.
Of the Dodgers,
that's what they're following suit. So the Cubs are trying to follow in line on the success that the Yankees and Dodgers have had in generating money.
Has the Dodgers been branded a success? I thought half the area still wasn't. You couldn't get them.
It's a business success on how much money the Dodgers are getting.
Okay.
It is not a good consumer success.
So they think they're still up on whether everybody could watch it on free TV, even though half the people can't get it on the cable or 40% or whatever the number is. They think they're still... Is that just their story and they're sticking to it, or do you think it's true?
Well, the Dodgers deal is for 25 years, $8.35 billion. And I think that's the bar that the Cubs are aiming for, is in 25 years, can we generate $8 to $9 billion for our organization? Right. And if they can, great.
All right, I'm always asking the wrong question, because what I'm trying to get to is the cable company that paid that, are they breaking even at least?
No. As a matter of fact, according to the Los Angeles Times, the two Time Warner Cable executives that worked that deal are no longer with Time Warner Cable.
All right, now I'm acting like a combination of an economist and a trader like I am. Does that mean, is that a separate... Is Time Warner up top on the hook for this, or is this a separate cable company owned by Time Warner? After 2 years, they can say, screw you, we're out.
I think something with Time Warner Cable Los Angeles was absorbed by Charter Communications. So it's on the cable company.
And, you know, the problem is that it was only available on Time Warner in the area. I think the largest television distributor in Los Angeles is DirecTV. So if you had DirecTV, you couldn't get the channel. And I know that that's something that they are currently working on. For the Dodgers, they want to charge $4.95 per subscriber for each home. The Yankees in New York charge $6.37 per month for each subscriber. So I think that the Cubs are going to probably land in between. I wouldn't be surprised for those that live in Chicagoland that this new marquee channel will cost you $5 a month out of your cable bill.
Out of your cable bill or addition to?
Well, probably addition to. Depends on your cable provider, if they're carrying the channel, and if it's part of your existing package.
Okay. That's what we were kind of kicking around earlier. But I think if it's, do you want to pay $5 more for the Cubs, it's a clunker. If they somehow can bury it in there and say your cable bill just went up $5, I think the Cubs, that's what the Cubs are looking to have happen. You know what I'm saying? There's a difference. There's obviously a difference there.
Well, whichever allows the Cubs to make more money is the direction that they will go.
Well,
so we'll see how much cash it brings in for the Cubs.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. The incentive, I don't know, the thing that sort of frosts me is I think WGN in those years they did worse than I did with my season tickets when the team got so lousy. I think that they lost money hand over fist for 4 years. And now other people are gonna participate maybe in the largesse, but that's the way the world works. It's not like, you know, I can't change the world. But hey, so you think it's a winner, right? Eh? You think they're gonna give every cable company on sign up day one?
No. I don't know how many times I'm gonna have to say no, but no.
Where does it leave the other guys?
I can tell you this. Based on what has happened with other teams, AT&T has refused to carry these channels because they don't want to pay the $5 per subscriber fee to the teams. So if you have AT&T UVerse, I doubt that you'll be able to get this channel. Comcast owns NBC, so why would they pay $5 per subscriber for your channel that's a direct competition for a channel that they own?
Right, yeah.
So this is where the sticky point's going to be for the Chicago Cubs. And, AT&T not only owns UVerse, but also DirecTV. So it's going to be interesting to see what the negotiation tactics are. They would not announce anything if the negotiations weren't far along, that they knew that they could at least launch this on one of the major distributions. And, you know, the major distributions in Chicago are DirecTV, which is owned by AT&T, and Comcast, which Comcast is part owner of NBC Sports Chicago. So we'll see. We'll see who carries the marquee channel. We'll see how it's going to be available for subscribers. And I'm curious to see if they're going to have a streaming option where they will allow people who have cut the cable to still buy a package and be able to watch the games on a tablet or smartphone or smart TV. Because I think that is the direction that Major League Baseball needs to go, because Comcast is losing cable subscribers every business quarter, but they are gaining internet subscribers.
Right.
So they're going to have far more people who have internet with Comcast and actually have cable.
Well, we were arguing about that earlier. Yeah. I mean, there's only one pipe into your house, so to think you're leaving them is a little naive.
Right. So we'll see. Again, I don't think they would announce anything like this if they weren't far along in negotiations with already one of the major providers. But if they haven't, yeah, this is not going to go well. They're not going to make as much money as they think.
Well, let me ask both of you experts, if it's totally an add-on, whether it's Maddie's streaming service or on TV or whatever it is, if the Cubs say for $5 a month, you can get the Cubs. Okay, well, if I'm Comcast and I go out to Josh's home and I send him a flyer and say, you can now get the Cubs. I'm gonna want part of that. I'm not putting the Cubs on for five if I'm paying the Cubs five. So say the number is going to be, I don't know, what do we suppose their normal markup is? Say it's 7 or 8. If it just goes out to people's homes, it now costs you $8 a month to get the Cubs. What do you think the, I have no idea. How many people sign up for that?
I don't know. I mean, that's the great question. The great unknown regarding what the Cubs are trying to do here. The teams that have attempted to do this, I mean, with Yes Network, they carry other games. They carry Brooklyn Nets games.
That's what I was going to ask in the next
question. They carry some hockey games.
So it's a full...
So the Yankee... Well, the Bulls are staying on NBC Sports Chicago. The Cubs are on their own.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And so the Nets are on the Nets are on the Yankee station. Anybody else?
They carry...
They have one of the hockey teams.
Yeah, they carry, I think, either the Rangers or the Islanders. I know they simulcast some WFAN sports radio as well.
So they have three teams at least, not one.
And then they might even do some, like, college games, too. I mean, they can't do Yankees 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Are they planning on charging me my $5 in January?
Yeah. Every month you got cable, man. Every day that you have this channel... They want your money.
Well, if it's a total add-on, how many people do you think are going to cancel it come October?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. Now, the thing about partnering with Sinclair obviously owns other programming rights. And one of them is Stadium. Now, Stadium is based in Chicago. It's online only. And Stadium has deals with several college conferences, and they stream those games. So that's an opportunity where Sinclair can use one of their own entities, and they could take that broadcasting and not only stream it on Stadium, but bring Stadium onto the marquee network to bring additional programming. So there'll be other games that fans can watch on the channel. So that's one idea that I had. The funny thing that's about Stadium was actually launched by a production company called Silver Chalice, which is owned, and the president of this production company, the owner is Jerry Reinsdorf, and the president is Brooks Boyer, who's the chief marketing officer of the Chicago White Sox.
Yeah.
And they sold a large chunk to MLB Advanced Media. So Major League Baseball has ties into Stadium. So that's where I see that happening, where the Cubs can get additional programming on their channel, is bringing something like Stadium onto their marquee channel, because you got to fill 24/7 programming, right?
Right?
You can't just do infomercials from midnight to 6 a.m., which I guess you could. But again, you know, you're charging, you want $5 per subscriber to carry this channel. From DirecTV or from Comcast or AT&T Uverse or RCN in Chicago. So you gotta provide additional revenue, or I guess entertainment options other than the Cubs when it's, you know, during the off season.
Have I told you lately how much weight you can lose on this Peloton for 4 hours every night? You know, type of thing. Hey, just out of serious curiosity, because I'm naive on this. I know AT&T did not have the cable in our area, Maddie. They had, what's the other thing they call it? It's not as fast as cable, but you can get internet off it. It's, what's the other technology?
DSL.
DSL. I'm gonna say in my area, and we have Infinity, and Maddie, well, I guess
Xfinity, Comcast.
Xfinity,
yep.
Okay. If all of a sudden, in our stream coming down our alley, or say it's a 2-block long cable, what if 25 people are watching a Cub game at the same time? I got to believe that's a problem for that stream. I mean, isn't that the problem with some of the people doing the Netflix and everything? That if 20 people on the same substation are watching Netflix, it's an issue. I mean, maybe it isn't anymore, but wasn't it like, didn't we have somebody on a year or two ago, Manny, was saying how that's a, they try and figure out how many people are watching it per day, and if you stay home all day and watch it, you're not bothering them, but if 15 people are watching a movie at night, it's a problem. We had somebody talking about that, man. Who the hell was it?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, I mean, in other words, is the capability of the city's system for everybody to watch streaming Cub games, get a million people watch it, and quote the Comcast or Xfinity at the same time? I don't know the answer to that. if it's coming off the internet and not essentially off the cable piece? Or are they both the same? I don't know.
I think that would be fine. There's already millions of people watching Netflix at once in Chicago.
Okay.
I don't think that's a problem at all.
All right, Jay, what's spring training? We got people that nobody wants to sign. Cubs have pretty much stood pat. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. Bryce Harper, is he going to be playing for our softball team this year? We could use him.
You know, with Bryce Harper, it sounds like his options are dwindling. Bob Nightingale of USA Today reported that the San Francisco Giants and the Philadelphia Phillies are the front runners for Bryce Harper. But, you know, you're getting word out of San Francisco that their offer isn't a long-term contract. It's up to 5 years is what's being rumored from San Francisco media. So that's not going to get a deal done. So I don't really seriously consider the San Francisco Giants as a contender for Bryce Harper. For Manny Machado, you're getting conflicted reports out of New York if the Yankees, one, even made an offer to Manny Machado. And if they have, you know, how much was that offer? You had the rumored offer of $220 million, but then the person that, you know, made that comment dismissed that rumor shortly after. So I don't think the Yankees have actually made a formal offer to Manny Machado, which means the only formal offer Manny Machado has on the table is the Chicago White Sox. And yesterday, John Heyman tweeted that it's not the rumored 8 years, $250 million, but it is more than the 7 year, $175 million. So like everything in life when it comes to rumors, it's somewhere in between $175 to $250 million. However, Major League Baseball Players Association President Tony Clark tweeted out a comment yesterday that this breaks free agency violation. This is a violation of free agency, and somebody has an agenda. So now you have the MLB Players Association president starting to get irritated about how the discussions and what is being reported on the rumors regarding the courtship of Manny Machado. And, you know, tomorrow I hop on a flight, Chief, and I go to Puerto Rico for 10 days on vacation to recharge and get ready for the 2019 Major League Baseball season. And I have this concern that during these 10 days, both Bryce Harper and Manny Machado are going to sign. But where we are today and having a, you know, good understanding on how these large deals happen, from rumors to announcements, is that when I come back to Chicago on February 25th, both of these guys could still be unsigned. And spring training games would have started. And it just raises the question of, does Major League Baseball really have an issue with free agency? I think they do. My suggestion is they need a signing window that starts at the first day of the winter meetings in early December and ends on January 31st. And you have all this activity happen in 2 months.
Why do you think...
You don't see this in the other leagues. You don't see this in the NBA. You don't see this in the NFL. But you see it in Major League Baseball, where now this stuff is dragging out into the middle of spring training, and we don't know where these two megastars are going to go. And it just seems like teams really don't have that much interest in 26-year-old all-stars, and that also doesn't make any sense either.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to push back, but I'm going to... You've been in the office. You know my filing system? Well, I was cleaning out, right? And I whenever you save a piece of paper from 8 years ago, there's a reason why you did. Well, I came across one where it was Roger Clemens, the tail end of his career, was looking to sign on with somebody, you know, whatever, he was making a bunch of money, and somebody was going to pick him up for the ass end of whatever year it was. And the guy was an economist sort of dude or across the country, and he went through the numbers. And it's amazing how he was saying the major league owners are actually getting smart. And he ended up going somewhere where they said, okay, the Yankees needed this many wins to make the playoffs. The playoffs is worth this amount of money to you. And oh, by the way, their fifth starter was some schlump. So if you interject Roger Clemens and he wins, he's going to get 7 starts. So if he wins 5 games, the other guy you'd figure he'd win 2. That's 3 games. That's going to put him over the hump that he's worth X to them. Okay, and they went through the other teams. There was like 4 teams that were the possibilities that were sort of in this playoff hunt. And if you looked at who the fifth starter was, how much better he was, how many games you could estimate he may be worth to you, the team that paid the most was the team that he was worth the most to, or that they actually signed him for the money that he had, you know, whatever, the 4 months left on his huge contract that he had his last year. And it came down to extreme amount of somebody put some thought into this, right? It's not just them jumping because they have people in the stands. And I really wonder, just because some bleep agent says that these guys are worth $40 billion a year, I'm thinking if you and I and Maddie sat down and said, all right, this guy's worth 200 hits a year, but an $8 million guy is worth, you know, 170 hits a year. Man, I don't know the numbers. It's probably not that many. I mean, I'm getting 30 more hits for twice the dough. I mean, I'm better off with, I mean, I wonder if the number these guys are talking about, virtually everybody in baseball saying it's just too friggin' high. That I don't care who he is. He could be Solomon, and I don't want him at that number. I mean, I wonder how much of it is that and not this big collusion, just the realization that one person isn't worth $25 million unless he's, you know, filling up a stadium. He'd be worth it to some place that doesn't. He might be worth it to the White Sox because they might sell 5,000 season tickets tomorrow. The Cubs aren't going to. Most of these other teams aren't going to. I just don't think they're worth what they're asking, Josh. I mean, it's not a fact that, you know, we're going to collude to keep them out. I mean, is that possible, or am I just being nuts?
No, I think you are looking at it from the owner's perspective, which I think the owners would agree with you. I think for GMs, they don't want to go the amount of years that these players are asking for. And they don't want to sign Manny Machado and Bryce Harper to 10 years. Because then you have control of them to 36 years old, and you would think, oh, this is a great idea. Except that the 33, 34, 35, and 36-year seasons are probably not going to be very good. And I think teams are more comfortable signing these players to 5 to 6 years. And they will pay top dollar. They will pay the $30 to $35 million a season. They just don't want you on the payroll when you're 33 years old.
Well, I think
a great example is Adam Jones, the Baltimore Orioles outfielder. He's still a free agent. He's 33. And at this point, he may just get a minor league contract offer, which just gives him a shot on making a 25-man roster. And it's all about age today. And I think teams just do not want to take on that risk after the age of 32.
I think, Josh,
if they were willing to sign 5 or 6 year deals, Chief, they would have already signed by now. But I think it's all about years of control.
But consider this a little bit. I think it also has to do with, we don't have much time, your view of the future. I mean, if you think, say you're signing a guy who's a 9 on a scale of 1 to 10 for $20 million, if you think 8 years from now that the economy is going to be so much better, ticket prices are so much higher, that even a guy who's a schlump, who's a 4 on a scale of 1 to 10, is going to be making that kind of money. Sort of like Magic Johnson, a 20-year million-dollar contract. Well, hell, after 20 years, he could have been on the end of the bench, and he would have been making $1 million. You know, so because the things, I don't think that these guys think that the as high as they have them now, skyboxes and tickets and every, you name it, everything else, I don't think Major League Baseball feels that in 7 or 8 years, all that's going to double to where the $20 million you're paying will be worth $10 million 8 years from now. Because that's what happened with the Soriano deal. The economy just didn't grow. And all of a sudden, you're paying this guy, what, at age 34? But there was a time in sports where eight years away, you'd pay anybody, you know, it was a pimple on the ass of an elephant, right? I mean, I don't think these guys have this rosy view of the future where they're taking it. That's part of it, I think. What do you think? You got 30 seconds.
I think then you're looking at it correctly. That I think from a team perspective, every team would feel more comfortable with a 5 or 6 year deal than signing a 9 to 10 year deal. And obviously the 9 to 10 year deal brings the most money, brings the most headlines, but I think moving forward, agents need to change the way they attack free agency. They need to think more about the annual average value, the AAV, and not the amount of years. If I can get you $30 to $35 million over the course of 4 to 5 seasons, we should take that. Because, yeah, you can test free agency again, and I know it's not an 8 to 10 year deal that every mega star free agent wants, but this is going to get you the top dollar, and it will get you out of this waiting period that we have seen the last 2 years.
All right. Josh, let us know. Give us a shameless plug for your place, and I'll tell you to enjoy your vacation.
So we're thank you, sir. You can read everything on SoxMachine.com, and you can follow us on Twitter at SoxMachine.
Have a nice time. Stay out of that sun, buddy. It's hot down there. SP Futures up 9. We'll be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.